Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13 and certain verse 9. The light of the righteous rejoiceth, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well advised is wisdom. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it is a tree of life. Whoso despiseth the word shall be destroyed, but he that feareth the commandment shall be rewarded. We left off in verse 8 last week and start in verse 9. The light of the righteous rejoiceth. The light of the righteous rejoiceth. Turn to Psalm chapter 4. Interesting phrase there. Talking about the light of the righteous, and I'm looking at that and going, okay. And the first thing I'm thinking of is the little song that we used to sing when I was a little child, This Little Light of Mine. Okay, I understand that's not what it's talking about, but when I'm thinking about it, it's like, okay, this little light of mine, who should be my light? And that was Jesus Christ. And God himself, Psalm 4, 6, there be many that say, who will show us any good? When people are out there that do not know Jesus Christ as their personal Savior, who do not know who God is, they're looking at it and say, is there anything good in this world? Is there anything that is positive? Once again, I'll pick on the news. It's usually negative. It's hardly any positive news that will get the headlines, and it's good that we can see every once in a while something good. The last part of verse 6, Lord, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon us. Who's our light? It should be Jesus Christ. And Proverbs 13:9, the light of the righteous rejoiceth. That when we do something that he is pleased with, he gets a smile on his face. Turn to Revelation chapter 4. See where you get that from? Well, you know, it wasn't my thought, so you can blame Dr. Gipp on this one. Revelation chapter 4, verse 11. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they were created. For thy pleasure, if somebody's being pleased, they don't have a smile on their face. If we can please God once a day, that's better than most Christians. And if we are putting out there that we are different from the world, then it's going to be a difference that people can notice. Turn to Psalm chapter 27, verse 1. And as I said when we started this, that Solomon, with a lot of his knowledge, got it from David and Bathsheba. And the things that he wrote in the book of Proverbs, he got from David, his father, and obviously his mother, because, oopsie, that's just where most people get their, I know it's in here somewhere. Okay, 27:1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Notice that first part. The Lord is my light and my salvation. When we are saved, even though I know the salvation is more a physical and a thing of, in the Old Testament, but we apply it to our lives, he's the light of our salvation. When we know that we are truly saved and we know there's something different with us, our light should shine out. There should be something different. And when people see there's a difference in our lives, you're going to be saying to themselves, what in the world is different about those people? Turn to John chapter 1. John chapter 1. And I was talking to Pastor Stewart before we started. And this city is the strangest city I've ever seen in my life. I swear to God, I'm being more and more amazed how God is working through this church and working through the community, through the city council and everything else. And not to steal your thunder, but I'm just going ahead. They want maybe to headline the people that the chicken plucker, the Kentucky pluckers. The chicken plucker. Yes, I am. Obviously, I'm kind of hungry this evening. I guess I did eat, but obviously not enough. The Kentucky pluckers, they might want to have them headline the Bird and Bluegrass Festival in October. That is just, well, what? I think, they're good musicians. I don't have no qualms about that, but what city, except for Ridgefield, in the United States today would have a Christian bluegrass group come in and headline something that it's going to be sponsored by the city? Not many. That's just God showing his light through this thing. Let's see, verse 4. John chapter 1, verse 4. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. And once again, people might not understand what you're all about, but they'll come up and ask you, why is there a difference? Why are you different? Why do you want to do this? Why do you do that? There was a man sent from God whose name was John that came for a witness to bear witness of that light. John was the witness, and we need to be the witness the same way, not the same way as John, but similar to John, that all men through him might believe. He was not the light, but he was sent to bear witness of that light. That was a true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. When we go out there, when we shine our light, it should be shining Jesus Christ. As I said a couple weeks ago, and I'll keep repeating it, we're the only Bible most people will ever read. They will never open up this book. They don't want to open up this book. They don't. But that's just written by men. Oh, really? Come on, folks. How many men do you know that would go Romans 3:23 for all of sin and come short of the glory of God? How many positive books about how to make yourself better is out there nowadays? It's always positive thinking. Positive, positive, positive. And this is nothing wrong with being positive, but folks, when we look at this world, there's not a whole lot positive that's happening in there. Christ was the light. We need to be that light for him. He's the light of the world, and this light is what gives us our hope, desires, and hopefully one day our new bodies. Sometimes I wonder if he's ever going to do it, but Romans chapter 13, it's like, come on, God, come on, come back. Please come back. Romans chapter 13, the older I get, the more I want him to come back. I was trained by somebody, and I agree with him. When I go out of here, I want to turn around and stick my tongue out the world and say, I told you so. Okay? See, that's not very Christian of you, I know, but you know, I just want to stick my tongue and say, I told you so. I was right, nanny, nanny, nanny. Romans chapter 13, verse 12, the night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, the old man, the old things that we used to do, and let us put on the armor of light. And you can reference that to Ephesians chapter 6, and you start going down through the armor of God, and you just read that, and like, that's the armor, that's a reference to the armor of light. You know what? We need to be different. We need to show that light. And when that light is shown, sooner or later, somebody will be saved. Now, a good example, I'm going to use this because, and the armor is mentioned in the Ephesians 6, 10 through 19, obviously, is Silas. Okay? I know other people witnessed, but, you know, it was kind of obvious when he brought coal. Now, how many people that would go and get on a baseball team would actually witness as a Christian telling people that there's something different and that he goes to church? How many boys... How old is Silas anyway? 12, 10, 11? Okay, about 11, because I was close. 10. How many people that age would actually witness to somebody on a baseball team? How many teenagers would witness to somebody if they were on a baseball team or something? That gets kind of rough because you want to be like, you don't want to be any different. But, you know, it gets rough. And he brought him in, and then Cole got saved. You know, that's a good thing for... Obviously a good thing for Cole, but it's a good thing for Silas to actually see that actually happen. And it's good for some of the younger children to see that too, that they can make a difference. And it's always good when you can show that light and that light can make a difference. And, I emailed Brother Rick Terrazas, you know, cause I want the teenagers to understand not only the positive things, but I also want them to understand how to pray for the things that he might have to go through. One thing that I know he has to go through, sometimes he sees some people, he gets them saved, and a month later they're gone. He never sees them again. To me, that would be a heartbreak. But he keeps doing it, and he keeps doing it, and I want the teenagers and people to understand how we need to pray for him. Proverbs 13, verse 9, we need to set our light out there, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. A lamp. Turn to Job chapter 21. It's a little bit different. Job chapter 21, verse 17. I know this is called something besides a lamp, but 21:17 of Job, how oft is the candle of the wicked put out? And how oft cometh their destruction upon them? God distributeth sorrows in his anger. Now, when God puts out somebody's lamp, he puts out their light, it's put out and there's nothing we can do about it. I'm glad that God gives us all the chances that we need. All the way to the last breath. My grandmother on my mom's side, she got saved a couple weeks before she died. Okay, might have been a month or so, but she waited way too long to get it done. She understood what the gospel was, but for some reason, and I never found out why, because it was never really talked about a whole lot, when she was on her deathbed, instead of asking for somebody from the Christian church where my aunt who lived with them, she asked for a Baptist pastor to come in, because we went to a Baptist church. And she could see there was a difference with my dad and my mom and us than the other people that she's seen coming out of church. So she wanted to know what the difference was. She just didn't see us when we were misbehaving. So, you know, as my aunt said before she died, is we were the perfect nephews. And I was like, okay, that's because we knew better than misbehaving their house. And it's like, okay, if you want to take that, you buy all the comic books you want. Come on, give them to us. Yeah, we'll take your comic books. We won't argue. The end of the lot of evil men are gone and extinguished. Just think about how some of the most violent men have died. Stalin's death was not a pretty sight. Hitler's death definitely was not a pretty sight. Some of these other people that they go around and do on things, and when you see how they die and they have violent and vicious deaths, and people look, they try to glorify this stuff, and it's not going to be a good thing. Turn to Job chapter 18, verse 5. Job 18, 5. Yea, the light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine. You know, most people do not look at the people that have been wicked and write books about them. I know there's a few books, but will be put out. They will be extinguished. There will be nothing about them that will glorify themselves in the end. Turn to Proverbs chapter 20, verse 20. Whoso curseth his father or his mother, his lamps will be put out in obscure darkness. I'm sure glad that's not for this day and age. Okay. Now, I know none of the other men here would ever have been mad at their parents and wished them dead or something, but, you know, and when you get punished, you no, that's not fair. Proverbs 20:20, his lamp will be put out in obscure darkness. What I'm thinking about this is, you know, obscure. Has anybody ever been in a fire? Okay, and what happens with your eyesight? The smoke gets in them and your eyes get wide. You're just wishing you could do. Everything's obscure. Everything's just not what it should be. You get disoriented. And I'm thinking about that and I'm thinking about, wow, obscure darkness. Wait till the great white throne judgment comes upon them and they get thrown down in the lake of fire. They think this is going to be just a fun and games. When I was growing up, one of the things that was discussed and talked about was a silly thing of, oh, I don't want to go to heaven because all my friends will be down in hell and I want to go party with them. There ain't no party in hell. You read the accounts, your friends are going to be chomping on you. What happens when you're in pain? You want something to bite on. When you're sitting there, you're in pain getting licked up by the flames, what is somebody going to do? They're going to look for something to bite on. They're not going to bite on themselves. So, hey, what's next closest object? I don't know what it is. Bite. And when you think about that, that's not very nice. Well, you know what? Sometimes we need to be reminded of what God saved us from. And when I read this stuff, it's like, wow, you know, there's some negative there, but you know what the positive is? I don't have to worry about it. I'm debt free because of God. Proverbs 13:10. Only by pride cometh contention. But the world, with the well advised is wisdom. By pride cometh contention. As it's been said, it takes two to tango. And that is referring to it takes two to fight. If there was a perfect church and I ended up in it, it would not be a perfect church anymore. Okay. I heard a pastor say that when he was preaching one time. Some people were complaining about this, that, and the other thing. He said, you know, if you guys went to a perfect church, you would just ruin it. This is when I was in grade school. It's like, you remember that? Yeah, I remember that because my dad reminded me every once in a while when I got myself a little bit too prideful for my situation. Now, there's a lot of people, pride swells up when someone challenges their authority. Oh, how dare you challenge me? I'm one of those that likes to challenge authority. I didn't say I was the brightest. It cost me some things every now and then, but, you know, the Lord landed me where he has. Pride kicks in for a lot of soldiers. And I love the U.S. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Do not get me wrong. I'm glad I live in this country. But some of these guys go around here bragging about what they did. Some of them never speak of it. The ones that never speak of what they did, I appreciate them a whole lot more than the ones that go around doing this. Why are they doing this? They're proud of what they did. And some of the people in Vietnam, I've heard of some of the things, and I've seen some of the shows on History Channel and stuff and what they had to do. I can see how it would mess them up for a lifetime. 18 and 19 year old children doing the things that they had to do, and it's like, that is just not a good thing. During sports, Muhammad Ali would always taunt his opponents, telling him he was the greatest. Okay, he was a great fighter. He was. There's no doubt about it. Was he the greatest? Who knows? You know, people. He was the greatest. You know, it doesn't. You know, but the first and the greatest person who ever had problems with authority, turn to Isaiah chapter 14. I remember this because I don't know how long ago somebody went through this while he was preaching, and this is like, I never noticed that before. I was like, how did I not notice that? I did notice it. I forgot about it. But sometimes you remind it when a pastor is going through. Most of the time, I know where he's going to go. Every once in a while, he throws a monkey wrench. It's like, hey, where are you going? And it's like, okay. It's like, huh? Oh, I forgot about that. Or I never realized it. One of the two. Isaiah 14:13. For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Five times he says, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will, and those verses. Five times. He says, I will do this. I will do that. I look at Lucifer at this point, before he came Satan the devil, I look at him as, why would you do that? He had the greatest job ever, did he not? He got to sit above the throne of God and show off his glory. I'm talking about Lucifer's glory. He was a beautiful creature before he fell, was he not? He was a beautiful creature. He's sitting up there and he got to show the glory that God gave him. And he's shown the light through him that God should have been doing. He would never fail, but he got himself this attitude of, oh, well, I don't want to be above the throne. I want to be on the throne. I want to be the top dog. I'm like, why would you do that? And we have other examples in the Bible. How about Cain? I mentioned it before. He has this issue of, well, I want to give the offering I want to give. That's just not a good thing. Some people that cause contention. We're not going to look these up. These are things that we should realize. In Numbers chapter 16, Korah, when he challenges Moses, that was kind of a contentious little situation. He says, well, I want to take him back. I don't care what you say. I'm just as good as you. And that's not a good thing to be doing to somebody that God says is his man. Never a good thing. Judges chapter 12, 1 through 6, talked about the men of Ephraim and what they did. First Kings chapter 13 talks about Rehoboam and how he decided that he was going to be a worse king as far as taxes and everything else than his father. He caused contention. I mean, if he just would have listened to the older folks and listened to their counsel and their wisdom, I understand that God meant for the tribes to split. I understand all that. But you read some of these other kings and God delayed the judgment until they were gone. He could have done the same thing. So how could he have done that? He's God. He could have done anything he wanted. But obviously God understood what was going to happen and it just happened. Luke chapter 22, verse 24, it talks about when the apostles were trying to decide who is the greatest among them. Well, it's the person that you don't count that is the one the greatest among you. Somebody called Jesus. He's the greatest because he's the one that's leading you. If you're not the leader, you're not the greatest. In our lives, we should not be thinking of ourselves as being the greatest. We should be thinking about how we could make him more of a example for the world. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 10. Cast out the scorner, and contention shall go out. Yea, strife and reproach shall cease. Cast out the scorner, somebody who mocks God, somebody who says that God is not relevant, somebody who says, I don't care what you think about God. I don't care about his principles. I don't care about his Bible. I don't care about his church. I just don't care. Somebody who just mocks and laughs at God, which is never a good thing. Proverbs 13:10. But with a well-advised is wisdom. Once again, Rehoboam misses this. And remember this, a lot of this book is aimed at him. Aimed at him. So, and Proverbs 13:1 says, a wise son heareth his father's instruction. That this whole chapter is to Rehoboam himself saying, listen to what I have to say for you. I think Solomon realized what Rehoboam was going to do. I don't think he knew specifically, but I think he understood that Rehoboam was having issues. And Rehoboam was having issues before he became king. And I think Solomon might have been able to recognize this. You have proof of that? No, but there's a reason why he says, a wise son, a wise son, a wise son. Why didn't he say a wise person? Couldn't he have said that? It's something for us to think about. You know, the older somebody gets, the better, hopefully the better the wisdom that they give you will be. That's not always the case. Once again, young people, don't ask your friends for advice. It usually doesn't work out very well. People that are older than you have most likely gone through what you are experiencing at that time. Now, hopefully they've learned from their mistakes and they will be able to give you something that you might be able to handle and to be able to understand, and maybe they'll just be able to listen to it. Listen to the old fogies, as what we used to call them when we were growing up. Huh, he's just an old fogey. What does he know? Boy, sometimes I wish I listened to the people that were trying to give me counsel and not did what I did. Our pride would be less and our contention would be out of here. Just as a church as a whole, not God's Word Baptist Church. I'm talking about church, that Christian, the people that claim to be Christian, if we could just get along. I was talking with the teens on Sunday, back in about 1990s, 1988, somewhere in that vicinity, Billy Graham made a statement, and it was true then, it's probably true today. The Roman Catholic Church at that point was the largest church there was in the United States. He said, you know, that wouldn't be if the 150 some odd Baptist churches could just get together, we would be bigger than the Catholic Church. Problem, there's 150 different types of Baptist churches out there. You know, there's more now. You get that thing, Marlboro Baptist Church, whatever that dumb thing is that calls himself a Baptist. The one that goes around to the funerals and stuff. Oh, Westboro. No, Marlboro. You know, they're full of smoke and full of something else. So then you got that thing down in Arizona. And then, I mean, that's, yeah, I'm sorry. Those two churches that call themselves Baptists, I could never get along with. So hey, Proverbs 13:11, with a well-advised is wisdom. Hopefully when you get wisdom, counsel from somebody over there, well, at least use the Bible to get you there. Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. No, you do it without God. You do it with the things. Vanity a lot has to do with being ungodly, useless, of no good shall be diminished, made nothing. In light of eternity, what is true wealth? Salvation, that's the only thing that counts. What is the soul worth? What are you willing to give up to have fun? I said it before, I'll say it again. There's some people I haven't seen since I was... Lord, help me here. Since I was probably 15, maybe once since then. And that was when he was getting married to his wife. We can start a conversation and go. Patricia Byers was here a couple weeks ago. And it's like, she was back there. It's like, I wonder who that is. And it's like, and she knew exactly who I was. It's like, oh, obviously I haven't changed that much. And I didn't recognize her at all. I was like, oh, okay. And we ended up, here way too late. But it's like, sitting up here talking for a long time and listening to what they go through and being trying to interpret for the deaf and stuff. An interesting thing. But we got, I hadn't seen her since I was probably 19. Okay, and we picked, we picked up where we left off as friends. Why? Because we have something in common. And the wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. That doesn't diminish. That, that just makes everything good. People get their wealth by luck or inheritance, benefactors, whatever, arrange it so they cannot abuse their power. Sometimes, Paris and Nikki Hilton, oh, good God, I can go over them for a while with how stupid they are. Their grandfather put all the money in a trust. They only got so much. I thought that was the funniest thing I ever heard. They couldn't spend all the grandfather's money. I thought that was the greatest thing. And his son couldn't get all the money either because the grandfather put it in the trust, so they couldn't get it all. He gave it away to charity. Bill Gates is people that are going to be left after he's gone. I don't think he has kids. I'm not sure. What? He does. Okay. I never hear about his children, so I guess I think he has children, but, they get so much and then the rest of it in the Bill Gates Foundation. And the reason is he doesn't want them to get something for nothing and get it for just because who they are. Donald J. Trump, people say, well, he got millions of dollars when he got of age. Okay, yeah, but he's a billionaire now, so he's actually did something with it. All right, then. Sometimes I wish he'd just get off the treats, but tweets, whatever they are. Best example of wealth gotten by vanity is the U.S. government. Okay? The state of Oregon, state of Washington. How many people have heard that drinking alcohol is a disease? Okay, and why does the state of Oregon and Washington tax, sell, bottle, and sell it? If it's a disease, why are you selling it? Why are you taxing it? Why are you saying it's okay? Yeah. What? Sin tax, yeah. I thought you said syntax, and I was like, that's a word, I don't even know what it means. Syntax, okay. Yeah, I was like, what? Come on, guys. Now they're selling something else that it's even worse. The state of Colorado and the state of Washington have both put out that 1/3 of their new driving under the influences is because of people smoking something they shouldn't be smoking. 1/3 of the driving under the influence. 1/3, folks. Why do they sell it? Wealth gotten by vanity. And they're saying, well, there's no problems with it. Are you serious? 1/3? Don't tell me they already know of one case where somebody killed somebody by being high and driving. That they've admitted because they couldn't get around it. And it's like, well, there's one. How many more do we not know of? Let's look at the two greatest, maybe look at one of the greatest people that taxing is King Saul. He taxed a lot. Nobody ever realizes it, but he taxed a lot. Yeah, he had a problem. You know what happened with King Saul? He lost his head. He more ways than one. And then, King Solomon. What happened to him? He started out being a great king. He ended up being not following God and following after so many of the people that was called his wives. Verse 11, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. You know what? In the United States, we still manufacture a lot of things. And that, and whether it's making tents, making trucks, when you actually do something with your hands, you appreciate it more. No offense. You're doing contracts, you can have that job all day long. You couldn't pay me enough. Okay? That's also necessary. But when you actually do something with your, or doing stuff with computers and that, once again, you can have that all day long. And you, and if you ever drove around with me, you probably say, how in the world do you do this? Ugh. Yeah, you just age yourself every once in a while. When you actually do something, you actually finish a project, it makes you feel so good. It could be a doing contracts can be the same way. You get done with a contract, oh, finally, no more of this lawyer stuff. You know, oh no, we want this. Oh no, no, we went over here. Oh no, we went. Just trying to sell my mom's house, and it's like, the people that put a cash bid on it says, well, we want this, we want that, we want this. And the real estate agent, when he said, you want it, I want the money. Just sell it. That's all I care. Just sell it. I don't have any things that just, you know, we used to manufacture that. Shortly after World War II, we became very generally lazy and fat. So we became so prosperous, the generation after the World War II people, out of the baby boomers, we got spoiled. We really did. And it's not getting any better. You see, that's not very nice. Well, you know, I'm part of that generation after. Okay? That's part of me. I might be the generation after that, but I mean, that mix where we got, our parents didn't want us to go through what they had to go through. And I understand that. A lot of the families, and it's a great thing where you want the children to have it better than you. That's a good thing to want. It's also good for somebody to actually have to work for what they get. It's always good. When I took over the youth group at Amazing Grace, they wanted to go to camp. I said, great, fine, earn it. Boy, did I get flack from the parents, the pastor, and the kids. And they said, I didn't say they had to earn the whole thing. No, no, just, well, that, I wouldn't mind that either, but, you know, I wanted them to know that, you know, and we had a car wash. And they said, we don't want to wash cars. And I said, just, the Arco station on 39th and Main said we can come and use all the water and do whatever we wanted and use the facilities. And we're just sitting out there, we're doing it. And after we're done, he said, this was pretty fun. As I'm soaking wet from, I think the guy kicked out. I was, you know, helping probably wetter than anybody else. And when they were going to camp, they said, thank you, because now we understand that we actually earned it. They actually appreciated it. They actually had to do something for it. And it's a good thing when people realize, you know, if I actually work, I can actually get something. It takes a lot of nerve and moxie to start your own business. Not to throw in the towel. Bill Gates, as I mentioned earlier with Microsoft, with Paul Allen, the other guy, whoever he is, Steve Jobs and Apple. He that gathereth shall increase. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. It's a great thing when we can actually see the fruit of our labor. And Pastor Bill will be able see three people saved in the last few months and somebody coming up from the Carolinas to help them, and things are starting to look up for him after all this time, and it makes you just feel good that he's worked and he kept trying to be faithful, and somebody paying $300,000 off that he had no idea how that was going to be paid. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 5, but if our unrighteousness commend the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Is God unrighteous who taketh revenge as... I'm in Romans. I want to say, what did I do? Let me look at my notes again. That doesn't sound right. Hey, that looks better. Boy. God will humble you very quickly. Verse 5. Verse 3 says, for ye are yet carnal, whereas ye, there is among you envy and strife and divisions, and are ye not carnal and walk as men, for while one saith I am of Paul and another I am of Apollos, are ye not carnal? Who then is Paul? Who is Apollos? But ministers by whom ye believe, even as the Lord gave to every man. I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. Paul says, Apollos did the planting, I did the watering, but you know what, at the end of the day, God gives the increase. We, you know, passing out tracts, you may never see somebody saved because of that. Giving a witness, you might not see them saved, but you know what, in heaven we will. Okay. The reason I use Rick Tarazas is because Rick Tarazas is here. Okay. We can see what he does with the Christmas stockings. A few years ago, more than a few years, I don't know how many years ago. It's been a while. I was still pastoring, so it's been, good grief, 8 years ago maybe, somewhere in that vicinity. I'm sitting there on Christmas Day driving around, and I get a call from Donald D. Long, one of the juvenile detention centers that Brother Rick goes to. And I'm thinking, boy, I see the results of, you know, it's, I see his newsletter. I see this many people saved in this facility and this. But God, you know, I don't know if we want to keep doing this for him as a church and as me, as, you know, do we still want to keep doing this? God, you need to show me. And I get this thing from Donald D. Long. And I said, okay, I pull up there and I got there kind of quick and nobody's there. I call the phone number and they don't answer. I'm going, well, this is not good. Yeah, you know, you can't get in the facility and nobody's around. And I'm going, I'll sit here for a couple minutes and then I'll leave and we'll see what happens. And I'm sitting there and I'm praying. I'm like, God, this is good that you got me here. But, and then a mother and her daughter come out and get in the car and I'm sitting there and they say, oh, we're sorry about taking so long. I said, I understand. I know you have to go through the processing and, you know, you're getting released today. And that's not an issue. And she starts going and says, you won't believe it, Mom. Somebody gave me a scarf and shampoo and a toothpaste and soap. And I'm going, Rick Tarazas, Rick Tarazas. In my mind, Rick Tarazas, Rick Tarazas. Somebody got a Christmas stocking. I've seen the results. That young lady, probably 12 or 13, maybe a little older than that, said she made the right decision to get saved. When she was going home, she was trying to witness to her mom. She didn't know how to witness to her mom. And I'm going, I got it. In my mind, I'm going, I got it, God. Yes, I'll keep doing it. I'll do what I can for him. Why? Because I've seen the result. Rick labors. He goes, and he just keeps going and keeps doing the things. You know what? To see somebody saved, in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, it talks about Apollos watered, planted, Paul water, God gives an increase. If we're not out there trying to see souls saved, because it takes prayer. It takes a mother or a grandmother praying for their children or their grandchildren or their nieces or nephews or the pastor or the missionary or the evangelist that comes in. It takes effort before that person gets saved. It's not that somebody goes to church and, oh, I want to be saved now. How many people were saved the first time they heard the gospel? I don't know how many times. I was in church before I got saved. When I was growing up, I remember going to church, and then it's like, okay, I understand this. And it's like, I do. And then finally God got a hold of me. We had a vacation Bible school, and I got saved at the end of vacation Bible school. That's why I like vacation Bible schools and churches. Why? Because I got saved during it. That's why. It's a personal thing that makes me happy. And you guys have a meeting tonight, right?